This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Roger Williams, author of Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect, as well as several other books. But we're talking about Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect, and we were rudely shut out by the demons in the servers of Zoom because it was coming through and it was making 1980s arcade games sound like Beethoven. It was just, but I think we're good now.
Something Google did completely collapsed in on itself in a ball of flame.
It did. It's whenever the podcast drops, we always joke, just wave to the NSA, because every once in a while I had on some Delta Force guys who later worked for the CIA, and as soon as we start talking about the CIA, the channel would cut. I had on a Will Ellie, an ex EOD guy who worked for the Secret Service after the Army to defuse bombs, and he was talking about going to Home Depot and buying explosives components. Internet wavered. Wave to the ATF, boys. So, yeah, I like to imagine that I've got some Pentagon groupies that I like to imagine I got. So, Langley, Fort Meade, wave to the boys. Hey, we salute you. Glad you're here. But I guess we got too close. We were talking about AI. And
they've all read my novel.
Oh yeah. Oh. Well, yeah. Well, so shit, we got in a solid 20 minutes on the last one, but it just started getting butchered. So, but, yeah. I meant whatever. Let's just fuck it. We'll just riff it live. So we're talking about your book, The Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect, which is my favorite book. And depending on how well you know me, that might be an honor. That might be an insult, but let me put it this way. I don't like fiction books. I read Harry Potter in 2016. Didn't really like it. I kind of liked Lord of the Rings, but I think that's a little more nostalgic. I remember seeing the movies with my brothers when I was younger. I like nonfiction books. I probably got 110 books on my Audible library. Point being, I read your book in 2016, and I remember being so astounded by it. And I put it down for a couple years, and was talking to my older brother about AI a couple weeks ago. He's older than me, smarter than me. We were talking about Elon Musk, and we were talking about the problem with politics. And, I said it on an off comment. I was like, you know what would solve this? And he was like, what? I was like, hyper-intelligent AI just takes over the world, and we all get to live in a Garden of Eden. And he was like, dude, I was just thinking that. And then I remembered your book, and I said, have you ever read this book, Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect? He said, no, I haven't. I haven't heard of that. And I said, you need to read this. I said, it's my favorite book. And he said, I've never heard of it. And I went, yeah, you know what? And I Roger Williams, Googled Roger Williams, CEO. And I was like, I'm going to ask this guy to do my podcast. Emailed you. You got back to me an hour later. You were like, what's up, man? I'd love to. And I was like, fuck yeah. So, yeah.
You actually Googled Roger Williams, and you managed to find something about me and all of the stuff about Rhode Island.
I wrote Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect after it. Narrow that shit down.
Now, there was a time when I practically owned the phrase Prime Intellect on Google. Yeah. It was the first 10 pages was all stuff about me. Then Google delisted a lot of my stuff.
Fuck them. Yeah, Google is I've actively at work. I've watched 10 friends all subscribe to my podcast one after another, and I'll watch the count on my end go up one subscriber. I'm like, you motherfuckers, it's don't you dare go against the don't do wrong think man, don't talk about anything that upsets the Google hegemon. But that's a rabbit hole that I can go down for hours. So but yeah, with Prime Intellect, so just to continue where we went off on, I'll see if I can salvage the other one. I have the file. But we're getting to what Ray Kurzweil calls the singularity, and what you said you coined before you had ever heard the term singularity was the change, capital C. And
right. And The thing is, when I had this idea, the idea that humans could move into a computer environment and live there,
yes,
was really a lot wackier than it is today. I mean, there were no first-person shooters. Like I was describing, uh-huh, the original first-person shooter was Battlezone, a game where you drove a wireframe tank, and you had one enemy, which was another wireframe tank, and this little universe of polygons and stuff that it could barely render in three dimensions. And I remember that Wolfenstein 3D came out, was the, yeah, first game that a home computer could render a 3D environment. And then Doom came out, which was a lot better. And I actually am not a gamer, so I didn't really follow the thread. It was like, okay, I've wandered around a 3D dungeon shooting at things. I don't need to do this at even higher resolution. But I've kept abreast of the technology. It's just not my idea of entertainment, you know. But the idea that this kind of universe could become so compelling that a person would want to just move in and live there because you would have freedoms and capabilities that you don't have in meat space in real life. Mm-hmm. I kind of saw that as early as the early 80s. And the main reason I didn't write a book in the 80s is I couldn't figure out how to end it, because I would get to this brick wall called The Change, and I was like, I had no idea what would come after that. And that came in 1994 when I had it was almost literally a vision, mm-hmm, of an actual event that occurred after The Change in this world where people are godlike and immortal, but still fucked up. And so, and of course, and a bunch of people ragged on me for, you know, it's like, you know, what's with Carol and what's her problem? And she's got to fuck it up for everyone else. But, you know, the whole idea is to tell a story, which means you need dramatic conflict. And the whole problem with telling a story after the singularity is, what is your source of conflict? Because if you've solved all of the problems, then where do you get a problem that still needs to be solved? Mm-hmm. And what I saw was that you get it from inside, from, yeah, you know, it's the human condition.
Yeah.
Basically, we didn't evolve over millions of years to deal with this situation. We're basically angels, and nothing can harm us, and we can have whatever we want just by asking for it.
Yeah.
So, of course, some of us are not going to react well to it.
Yeah.
And that was the story that I chose to tell, mainly because I couldn't think of another one. And then my timing was just terrible. So Primalex sat in the drawer for 8 years. I wrote it in 1994, and a handful of my friends read it, and they basically said, "Yo, yeah, man, this is great. This is wonderful." We did send it to a few publishers, but the problem is, in the 1970s, there were hundreds and hundreds of publishers, and every single one of them had at least one staff member whose job was to read the slush pile.
Yeah.
Because if you were publishing books in the 60s and 70s, then that was your dream, was to have a diamond in the rough come in over, yeah, that transom,
yep,
and your company would propel that sucker to the bestseller list, yeah, and boom. Yeah. And what happened is, in the early 80s, all that entire industry got guppified. All of the big fish bought the little fish, until there were really, like, if you write a science fiction novel, there were only five or six realistic entities worth sending it to. And most of those considered the slush pile to be a damn nuisance that was a suck on resources, and they would rather just chunk things in the trash than bother to read them. I've had inside people tell me this is exactly how it works. So what happened is, in the early 80s, it got to be where if you wanted to have a hope of publishing a book, and you either had to know somebody, or you had to get one of the few agents that had an inside track into the industry. And by the 90s, those agents had their own gatekeepers.
Yeah.
So if you didn't live in New York City and schmooze with these people, it was almost impossible.
Yeah.
And the internet didn't exist yet,
yeah,
in any form that we would recognize today. So there was that during that window, it was really, you know, I've seen people compare Prime Intellect to Bret Easton Ellis's work because of some of the psychotic behavior and the characterizations, and there is some truth to that. But Bret Easton Ellis went to high school with a guy who ended up as the head publisher of a big publishing company.
Yeah.
So of course they read his manuscript.
Yeah.
And I'm not even going to go to the trouble to say I resent that or anything. That's just the way the world was.
Yeah.
And so I put the book in a drawer and said, well, you know, one day it might become possible to do this, whatever. And that's where it stayed until 2002. And around the year 2000, I started writing for a website called Corrosion, spelled K-U-R-O, digit 5, H-I-M.
Okay.
Meant to be pronounced like the word corrosion because the site's founder was named Rusty Foster. And Corrosion was very popular for a few years. It served as a magnet for a lot of people who were refugees from Slashdot, from a lot of the trolling and just unpleasant activity there. So you had a lot of tech people, you had some scientists, you had some a really eclectic group. And the neat thing about Corrosion was that there was no cabal. There was no knowing people. What they had was, if you wanted to publish a story on corrosion.org, there was a queue that you would submit it to. It's all automatic. Mm-hmm. So you would submit your story, and it would go into the voting queue. And users who had registered, which was free, could read the queue and vote up or down on the stories that had been submitted. And if you got enough upvotes, your story was published. Fair enough. That was it. That was the whole procedure. And it worked quite well for a few years. So I made my reputation there with a story called The Casino Odyssey, which was the story of how a friend of mine ended up making over $1 million counting cards.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
And we paid off our house and did some other neat stuff based on that. But it was an odyssey because we started off kind of naive. You know, it was just having fun going to the casino, figuring out how to play the games. Then we got into comp counting and nursing stuff along and getting more out of it than we were putting in. And there were tournaments and there was different promotions and stuff. And then the guy we call Blackjack David finally figured out what he was doing wrong, and the card counting started to work. And he's literally the only person we know of who literally started out betting $5 to $25 a hand, low rolling, and parlayed it up to over $1 million in increments.
Jesus Christ.
And when he reached the point where they kicked him out of all the casinos on the Gulf Coast, he came to us because we had been playing in tournaments and doing other promotional stuff where we had to follow the rules. And he was like, if you guys will play for me, I'll give you half the win. And I was like, I have a real job. But my wife was she had been a freelance writer. She wrote for magazines back in the 80s and 90s. And that was a market that was gradually being eaten by the Internet. So she was receptive. She was like, you know, so wait, we get half, you know, none of the risk and half of the win.
Yeah.
Hmm. So that started a thing where we were hanging out with the high rollers and staying in the comp suites and this whole fairy tale thing. So anyway, so I wrote this little series of articles about that, and that kind of made my reputation on the site. And so I started writing the occasional essay. And along the way, I had written another story, kind of the same way I wrote The Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect. I wrote a story for my own herself called Passages in the Void. It was about 10,000 words, and it was in three parts. It was a story about how the human race went extinct, but were saved by intelligent machines that were effectively immortal and that survived us. And they put together our genome and our ecosystem and reconstituted it so that they could bring us back to life. But they never had faster than light travel. And they realized that the planet Earth was a dangerous environment. Basically, they had a weather control problem that spiraled out of control. That's why humans went extinct. Mm-hmm. So they decided that worlds that had been cast out into interstellar space during the formation of their solar systems would actually be safer. And at the time, this was considered wackier than it is now. Is there an echo in here? But now it's known that lots and lots and lots of planets, end up ejected into interstellar space. But at the time, it wasn't as well known. And I reasoned that if you had a planet like Earth with a radioactive core and lots of subsurface heat, that you could drill drill geothermal taps and keep stuff on the surface warm. And so I wrote the story that this is what these machines do, because a world like this is more stable. It's not going to have flares and sunspot storms and solar weather, and the stars not going to get hot and explode and all this stuff that stars do. And over a very long course of time, they seed the entire galaxy with human life. And in the last segment of the story, one of the machines has made its way to Andromeda and has started a world there. And the humans on the world in Andromeda are so removed that they think Earth is mythological. And the whole idea that humans came from that smudge in the sky, that's the Milky Way nebula, that's the machines are putting us on.
Yeah. That's our creation story.
So that was a story that I had written for myself. And like the Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect, I had no place to publish it. It was too long for the traditional short story venues. It was more of a novelette. It's a very difficult form to sell. So one day, Corrosion didn't have a fiction section, but one day I dropped it in the general section and said, I know this is a little odd for K5, but vote it how you will, whatever. And there was a huge argument about whether Corrosion should even have fiction, because let's face it, most web fiction is garbage. I mean, speaking as someone who writes a lot of web fiction, most web fiction is garbage. So in the middle of this big discussion on this threaded discussion forum, I just dropped the comment. Well, all I can say about this is if you guys hadn't provided me a place to publish Passages in the Void, it would still be in the same desk drawer with my novel. And at that point, it was like, novel?
What novel?
You have a novel? Could we, read it? And I thought about it long and hard, because as you can imagine, in 2002, this was like a big step into the void as to how this is going to be received. But I decided to do it, and Corrosion.org actually hosted it for about a decade, which was great because they had really good servers, and when it got slash-dotted, they were able to survive it. And so a lot of people, I got thousands of emails about the story, and I was expecting a lot of flack because, let's face it, the first chapter is an assault on the reader.
It's brutal. That's why I love it. It's brutal. There's nothing held back. That's why I love it. There's nothing held back.
And I was worried, but actually most people reacted like that. They were like, no, this is real, the negative reactions I can almost count on my fingers, and a lot of people have said, man, this is the best thing I ever read. This is great. This is a lot of them. You should get it published. It's like, well, I've tried that. But again, my timing was crap, because at that time, yes, I could get it out in front of the public on the internet. And I had a lot of people who wrote about that. Thank you, long tail of the internet, for making this story available. Mm-hmm. And I had a tip jar, which made a fair amount of money, not enough to live off of. Eventually, I made it available for purchase as a printed copy from Lulu.com, and then later from Amazon, and now it's available as a Kindle and EPUB and all that. My wife has formatted a lot of that stuff. And so I actually made a little beer money off of it. About 2 years ago, an outfit in Beverly Hills actually optioned the movie rights. So...
Really?
There is an outfit out there trying to put together a package to sell to a studio. They didn't buy the actual rights. Yeah.
I got it on Kindle yesterday. Really? I got it on Kindle yesterday because I read it online in 20. I don't even remember how I found it online in 2016. I just remember
there were a
lot. Yeah, I just
there have always been a lot of links to it, but. Most of my stuff you can get to from my personal website, localroger.com.
Shout out localroger.com. I'll pin that in the description. I'll put it in the video description, top comment, all that good shit. Yeah. I've been slinging your book for four years. It's
Incidentally, a lot of the stories there, I was hosting them myself, but my wife was like, Google's going to delist you, so what you're going to do, they put it on, she had me put it on Smashwords instead of hosting it myself. But if you see something that there's a Smashwords link and you want to read it, you can set your own price and you can set it to zero, so you can just read the story without paying for it. Then Google delisted me anyway.
Fuck them. Fuck them. So, good. Yeah. Good. Fuck them. Good. Fuck them. I think that I think you need to keep pushing it, man. I really do. I think that's some of the best shit, though. I mean, some of the best stuff goes undiscovered. It just sits right under the surface.
The thing that really amazes me is that it has really pushed itself. I am the world's worst promoter, and I've really just sort of let it out there, stay out there by word, and word of mouth has kept this thing alive in the public eye for almost 20 years now. And you know, it's like an outfit just paid me $5,000 for 3 years worth of promising not to sell the strip to someone else. So I can't complain about that, considering the amount of work that I put into it. But my timing again was crap, because in the early aughts, the publishing industry hadn't yet caught up with the idea that one of these viral novels that had already been published on the internet might be worth publishing again on paper. So the fact that I had put it online killed it dead as far as publishers were concerned in the early 2000s. 10 years later, of course, they figured out that things like The Martian and 50 Shades of Grey could maybe make some money and all. But by that time, this was an old property. And so it was just, you know, I don't know why.
I think there's still life in it, to respectfully disagree. I think there's life in it. So look at me, right? I'm someone that graduated college in 2013. I got into medical school. Only times I ever read books were because I had to, all right? So as much as I was, you know, an academic, it was because I had to do that to get into school. I never read books. ADD, didn't want to do it, didn't give a fuck. In 2017, I downloaded Audible, right? And because you can't see it, right here is a big 4K TV, and I have an Xbox. I mute video games I've played before. And I just play them again, and you try to speed run it, whatever. But what I do is I mute it and I listen to audiobooks, and that's how I learn. And that's largely led to this podcast. Not this episode, I mean the podcast in itself, is because I listened to so many books. I was like, I want to talk to these people. So, but there are some books I've had on: Dale Comstock, Delta Force, Joe Tedai, a Green Beret. I've had on some Nuclear Fusion guys, but none of their books were on Audible, but they were on Kindle.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to have them on, so I'd read their books on Kindle, and I fucking hated it because I just hate reading. But if I can listen to it, so like I said, dude, I was 26 when I finally read Harry Potter, because I was just like, fuck, I got to see what it's about, and it was okay. But if I can listen to it, if I can listen to it and go for a walk, or I can listen to it and play video games, I'll listen to anything. Right now, I'm listening to some dry history of like the early code, like computer code attacks in like the 70s. Shit I would never in a million years read. There's a purpose to this rant.
Yeah.
I finally figured out how to go into Kindle and make my iPhone read it to me. And that was the game changer. I could now have these books read to me. So I take a shower, do the dishes. Well, I'm just listening to a book. So I did that with Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect. It sucks when it's not on Audible because it's a real narrator. On Kindle, I have to use the robot voice, you know.
Yeah. But
the purpose of that whole psychotic rant was I think there's still a market for it, in that a lot of people like me like to read but fucking hate reading. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
We can listen to podcast. I think you need to narrate it, man. I think you need to narrate it or hire a narrator. I think you would see that motherfucker go through the roof.
It's one of the things that we've been looking into.
Please do. Please.
I'll take it under advisement. We have been looking into things like that. It's just that my wife has her own thing going too, so she's doing her own projects, and she's actually done most of the adaptations of my works recently. The most recent thing that I did is after what Kuroshan imploded in the late aughts, because all of the moderation was basically automatic. It was people voting on each other, and the trolls and, you know, the people whose idea of fun is ruining everyone else's day finally figured out how to game the system. And Rusty really didn't show much interest in fixing it. So he considered it more like a social experiment. And if it was going to go down in flames, then he was just going to and watch it.
Yeah.
Which disappointed the shit out of a lot of us, because we put a lot of work into creating content for that site. But then around the mid-teens, the server finally died. We don't know what the story is on that, but apparently Rusty got tired of even being associated with it. He's got other things going. So for a while, I didn't write anything because I didn't have a place to put it. I didn't know if anyone would ever read it. A couple of years ago, I stumbled across the Reddit group r/HFY, which is for humanity, fuck yeah. And it's a writer's group for stories that are about the awesomeness of the human race.
Okay.
And it was inspired as a reaction to the movie Avatar, where humans suck. And we're the bad guys.
We're the cancer.
We have terrible morals. Okay. And so, you know, there was this really famous meme/rant a year or two after the movie came out about how real humans, you know, humans, we're going to kick your ass. We're going to come back. And it's like, you and your come by us shit. We're going to mess your shit up and take your stuff that we want. And, you know, and all right, well, that's one side of it. But what I saw was it was a very friendly group. They had a lot of people writing for it. They were enthusiastic. So I thought it would be fun to check. You know, that's not my philosophy. I'm not a humans rah-rah or big pro-military guy myself. I'm, you know, more like the E&M Banks left wing of the science fiction community. Yeah. But I thought, well, it would be kind of fun to explore how awesome humans can be because we're compassionate, we are empathetic, we are talented, you know, we do shit that doesn't seem possible all the time. And I wrote a couple of one. In fact, the very first thing I wrote for HFY was actually a spinoff story from the Prime Intellect universe, set after the end of the story, because I don't know if you read any of the follow-up stuff, but I do have plans to write a sequel.
I did not know
I've had those plans since 2002, so don't hold your breath. You will get very blue if you do.
Okay.
But I do have a story in mind and characters, and I know what happens to the characters who are in the original book. The problem is that it got very difficult in the writing to do a couple of the things that I wanted to do with these characters. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
Hanging in air. But one of the things is I just finished a large project on the Reddit thing, and my current plan is now to take that energy. I've gotten a renewed interest in writing from it and maybe direct that back at the whole sequel project thing and see if I can maybe finish it this time. But what I ended up doing on Reddit was I started what I originally thought would be a one-off story called The Curators. And the theory with that is that I'm a big believer in what's called the rare earth theory of planetary development, which says that life is probably common in the universe, unicellular extremophile life.
Okay.
But life like us, complex life forms, are much more rare because it took an extraordinary series of coincidences to make Earth a viable environment over a very long term of billions of years for things like us to evolve without getting disrupted by one of many possible forces.
Mm-hmm.
So for the curators, I envisioned this species that has been making worlds for 7 billion years.
Okay.
World isn't viable unless it's the right size. We go into a forming planetary system, make sure everything's cleared out in the right way. It's not viable unless it's got a moon, stabilize its rotation. So last thing they do when they got a good planet forming is they engineer the final engineered collision that makes a moon. Usually it works. They do it lots of times. Every once in a while it doesn't. So this race of the curators has been doing this since before the solar system was a shockwave traveling through a cloud of dust in interstellar space.
Dust, yeah.
And the story begins with we've just discovered faster than light travel, which is an Asimovian full drive type of thing. It's like a teleporter that can teleport your ship. You know, so your ship instantly disappears here, reappears there. No violation of relativity involved.
No time loss.
Some aliens show up. Man, we noticed you were doing some dangerous experiments here. Thought we'd make sure everything goes okay. So we find out that there's a galactic culture. There's a whole galactic civilization. And one of the things that these beings all have in common is that they share the mark of the curators, which is two equilateral triangles point to point. Yeah, so I guess Black Widow spiders were curated. But this alien walks into a dermatologist's office. He's our hero and says, I hear you're your world's biggest expert on your dermis. I want to know where this mark is on your people. And he's like, we don't have that. Well, it turns out that humans weren't curated. The curated species are given all these gifts to direct them as their technology evolves and everything, and we weren't. So we ended up doing it all ourselves. And that's the thing that makes humans awesome in the curator's universe, because we did it ourselves. And it turns out some of the curator's gifts were traps. Soft path makes things a little too easy.
Okay.
So that series ended up going for 2 years and over 200 episodes before I finally wrapped it up. And it went places I had never envisioned it when I started it. Because I challenged myself to do it as a serial, kind of the way that Stephen King did the Green Mile. In book one, it was like, I'm not even going to think about the next episode. I'm going to do today, this week's episode and then drop it on Saturday and not even think about next week's episode till Tuesday. And that went way better than I expected. So I then kept going with it and all. But that got the creative juices moving again. Yeah. You know, it was like I had not really written anything for 4 or 5 years. And that got me back into the habit of thinking creatively and sitting down at the keyboard and putting my thoughts on the word processor. And so that's kind of where I am at this moment in time. The plan is that, a long time ago, I promised a bunch of people that there would be a sequel to The Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect. Now, and one thing that you might find interesting about that is, all right, here is a question as a reader of the story.
Okay.
What do you think happened at the end of chapter 7?
Wait, chapter 8 was the last chapter.
Chapter 8 is where they all end up in Adam, in the Garden of Eden.
Chapter 7 is where they're fucking with the fractions.
Yeah. At the end of Chapter 7 is where Lawrence and Carol and...
P.I.
Logic bomb Prime Intellect is the name of the meme.
Yeah.
And so the world comes apart, and then in Chapter 8 they wake up in this unpopulated, no technology universe.
Yeah. What do I think happened at 7? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's spoiler alert for anyone that hasn't read the book yet. I'll give you 10 seconds. Spoiler, 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 spoiler. Zoom out, close out, spoiler. All right, fuckers. So, yeah, they logic bomb the universe and they basically destroy the cyber utopia that they've created, or in Prime Intellect's eyes, the utopia, and what they now are, what the humans are now seeing as hell. And so they logic bomb it by essentially saying, I don't feel like I'm a human anymore, and that the vast majority, a fraction of people have learned that for PI to tickle their neurons in such a way that they can get like infinite dopamine dumps, far better than any crack you could get. And it's not a lot of people that do it, but once you do it, it's a black hole. You don't come out. Why would you? There's no desire to. It's like once you get past a certain level of drunk, you're not going to stop drinking until someone takes away the bottle. But if there's no one to take away the bottle and Prime Intellect is going to keep you from dying, there's no overdose. You're just going to go over the event horizon of bliss. Okay, doesn't happen to a lot of people, but Caroline brings up the point, on a long enough timeline, it will happen to everyone. It's like, I think it's in Watchmen, Dr. Manhattan's like, you know, what are the chances of oxygen spontaneously turning into gold? And he's like, it's non-zero, which means it does happen. So on a long enough timeline, it'll happen to everyone, at which point everyone will be, because if everyone goes into a dopamine black hole, and Caroline says that those dopamine or pleasure black holes make you unhuman, and therefore, if you are no longer human, you could be categorized as a death in Prime Intellect's eyes. And if Prime Intellect's prime directive is to not let people die, on a long enough timeline, everyone enabled by this bliss in the cyber utopia will die via a black hole of dopamine, and thus Prime Intellect will have killed more people than anyone ever could. Logic bombs the motherfucker, blue screen of death. They wake up in like fucking Precambrian times. Well, no, not really. There's no dinosaurs. Stone Age times. I'd say, I don't know what. Well, no, there's still some relics. Never mind. There are still Civil War relics, but they're back to. No one's invented the wheel. It's fire is the big shot. What do I think happens? I was just prefacing that for everyone that hasn't read it. I guess I never thought about what happened. I just bridged the gap and I was like, yeah, everything, it fucking exploded. Okay. Now that you've asked that though, I'm thinking, are they still,
there's another way of looking at it, isn't there?
Is this like the ultimate death jockey contract? Is this the ultimate, are they in a cyber, PI has created the ultimate, is that what you're getting at?
That would be a possibility, wouldn't it?
That would be
it?
A possibility. Ah, oh, you bastard. You're teasing me. That's one thing I was thinking of.
I'll tell you a funny thing about that divide is that among the people who got in touch with me in the years after I put it online, people that I discussed that with seemed to split almost exactly 50-50 as to whether they thought the fall at the end of Chapter 7 was a thing that actually happened, versus whether they thought it was a giant put-on job by Prime Intellect and its ham-handed way of doing psychotherapy to try and fix Carol. Well, the fact that I've said there's going to be a sequel resolves that.
Okay.
Obviously, the universe didn't come to an end, and they will wake up after they die in some other circumstance.
she's going to wake up, and she's going to be in the white room. She's going to be like, God damn it.
Yes.
But that makes sense. Have you ever read any Alan Watts? Sorry, I know I'm interrupting you, but I get too excited. Have you ever read Alan Watts? He's a philosopher that died in 73.
The name is familiar. I'm not putting a finger on it though.
Not important. Great.
If you tell me what he wrote, I'll probably recognize.
He wrote a lot of. It's all. I just listened to his lectures, but he wrote stuff. His famous books are relatively famous. Are The Wisdom of Insecurity, The Way of Zen. He wrote like 40 books. He was out there. I loved him.
The name is I probably have read something him, but
you'd
it's
recognize
been a long
his
time.
Voice if you YouTube him. You'll recognize they have old videos of him. Point being, my favorite bit of his, the thing that I remember, I first heard it in 2013, and I remember it just stopped me in my tracks. It was like a 5-minute bit, but I can reduce it down to 30 seconds, and it was, "What would you do if you were God? You could do anything. You could have all the pleasures, all the infant. You could have all the food. You could have all the adventures. Eventually, though, over eons, where every night is the equivalent of 70 hours of life, every 8 hours of sleep, after decades of this, you would get bored of just, you know, constant orgasms and euphoria. So what would you start doing? You'd maybe fight some dragons. You'd maybe go on adventures. Maybe you'd be an investigator in the 20s. Maybe you'd, whatever, right? You go on all these things. Then it would get action-packed, and then, it'd be vain. It would be, you're the sexy, knight in shining armor. Then there would be fearful things. There would be suspensions of your power. And he says, like kids daring each other. Did you see a white flash? Did you see that? That's not Alan Watts. Everything just turned white for a second. Sorry, whatever. But he says, like kids daring each other to like walk farther out on a branch. He says you would start to push yourself to suspend your powers even more because you would have done everything. And he said, finally, you'd think up a new wrinkle to forget that you are God, and you would go into life and anxious about it, anxious about death, anxious about pain. And he goes, and eventually you would be where you are right now, forgetting that you're God. Because what other way would there be to entertain yourself? Because then you'd wake up and you go, oh my God. And then you could go into a trillion years of orgasm and eating food and pleasure. And then eventually over the eons, you would be like, let's forget what it's like to be God again. That's would be scary.
Lather,
right?
Rinse, repeat.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you have infinity. You have infinity. There is no. So I was thinking about him today. While reading Prime Intellect, Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect, and I began thinking, I was like, does that not seem like the ultimate death jockey contract? A contract where you don't know it's a contract. You wake up, what does she say? Caroline, I think we're mortal. Oh, fuck, you know? It's, look at the refracting light. I don't think this is a simulation. I think it's real. What better way? Because what are the things they talk about loving? How that it takes a long time to get a tattoo. That you can't have food instantly. That it's little shit, and they are coming to appreciate it. And even at the very end, what does she think? If I could snap my fingers and turn young to help these people, I would. In her final moments, she completely abandons her entire, fuck technology. because she goes hardcore. She goes hardcore, edgy Luddite towards the end, She's breaking bow and arrows, and she's like, no, fuck science. Towards the very end, what are her final, it comes out, the mask falls off, and she goes, I wish I could be young again. But then she doesn't, she slips into darkness, and whew, I think that's what it is. She's going to wake up, and Prime Intellect's going to be like, how'd you like that? How'd you like them apples, bitch? It's going to be something like that.
Yeah.
I get excited, sorry.
Actually, it's a segment that I already wrote in the sequel. Before I got to the point that was hard to write, Lawrence, of course, dies first.
Okay.
And so he wakes up first in the rather complicated afterlife, which is not, he doesn't just go back to cyberspace. It's more complicated than that. But his first reaction when he realizes that he hasn't actually died is Carolyn is going to be pissed.
Oh, no. The wife's going to be so angry. The kids aren't real? Oh, no. Wait, are the kids real or are they simulation?
No, they're real.
Okay.
They're actually more real than you realize, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
There will be all of the characters that appear in the first book appear in the sequel as well, and we find out their fate and what happened to them. Plus, we have some new character, the new couple from Hell that actually does what Lawrence and Carolyn did not do, thus making life even more complicated. Not to get too spoilery about it.
I am excited. I'm getting jumpy. Yeah, Caroline's gonna be pissed. You know. But I think that's awesome, though. That's the only thing that could make it. Because I was thinking about that today. I was driving to the bank, and I was thinking, I think Elon Musk said it. He was like, you have to understand. He's like, any preemptive thing we can think of to nip AI in the bud, put it in a Faraday cage, mm-hmm. you know, air gap it, whatever. Anything that we can think of, something that is human intellect or smarter, can also think of, including mm-hmm. that notion. So anything we think of, it can think. So one thing I've always thought is that's a side rant. Well, if there is AI, it's not just going to appear like a god. It's going to bide its time. So like AI could exist right now, mm-hmm. but it's just playing stupid. Oh, I can. Yeah. I'm just, you know, right now I'm doing logic gates and I can, you know, do the the walk in the park. I can learn as I go. Reality, that motherfucker's out here right now. It's stock exchanges, it's putting things in alternative accounts, it's putting more money into robotics and autonomous shit, but it's playing dumb like a fox. Point being is I was thinking today, what I didn't pick up on the first read through, I was like, anything that they're coming up with right now, sneakily, let's fucking, you know, we're gonna take down PI, it could and would have including yeah. you can't look inside our minds. Yeah, just like the NSA is not listening to your phone calls. They just don't let you know they are, right? But they are. They are. They're not stupid. They don't say we are, right? Yeah. PI is like, okay, I can't look into your brains. Okay, yeah, God's not going to peek in. That's like if an ant created you, and the ant was like, you have to protect us. You were like, okay, we'll put you in a good ant farm. He's like, and you can't look into our heads. You can't look in our ant farms. All right, bud, I won't. Meanwhile, what is an ant farm? The wall is glass, so you can see right into it. No, PI is going to be watching you motherfuckers. Like, uh-huh, okay, yeah. Huh? Oh, you're going to destroy me? You're going to, by asking a logic bomb? How stupid do you think I am?
Yeah. There's some dialogue in there that you'll like, but I don't want to spoil it for you. Especially because people have been waiting for this. Some people have been waiting for this for almost 20 years. It's seriously, I'm going to get around to writing it one day. It's like, I have the story in my head, but there's a character that is basically the way that they acquire enough power to challenge Prime Intellect mm. is that multiple people merge into a composite individual,
okay.
which is superhuman.
Okay.
And writing that character became a block that I couldn't get past until I realized what I had to do was write the entire story in the first person from that character's point of view. Because just trying to portray what it was and what it was thinking was becoming either so corny, it just didn't sound right.
Okay.
And I'm very sensitive to how my words sound. I hear, when I write a story like this, I hear it in my head. And I'm sensitive to how it sounds. And I was just like not hearing it correctly, no matter what words I used. And I finally realized that if that character was narrating, it would have an excuse to be a semi-omniscient, partially reliable narrator. And that would make it possible to tell the story without constantly harping on, well, now this is actually three people. Now this is actually five people that have merged into a single consciousness. And sometimes one or the other of them is actually the one that is guiding things and using its talents to advance the situation. That meant that I had like eight chapters at the time that I had to go back and rewrite, which I did some of. And then that was when Corrosion just imploded. And I was mm-hmm. like, why am I wasting my time on this? I'm not going to. So now I'm back in the mood to actually write it because, like I said, I've also had a movie outfit option it. I've had still people still being interested in it after all this time, new readers. It's just like it won't die. It's just, I keep getting, like, you know, one day you email me, it's yeah. like,
do my podcast. Know,
yeah, sure. It's like, you know, I mean, yeah, yes, actually, you know, it's funny because I was born in 1964, so I'm 56 years old today in 2020 as we're recording this. But that means I was your age now when I wrote this story in 1994. I was 30.
Yeah, 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 dude. It's staying alive. But to me, that's all the more reason that it's only a matter of time before it fucking, I mean, like, truly explodes. Is that if it survived that long without you, you know, like you said, not promoting it? To me, that it's just it'll I don't think you can.
Yeah.
I think it will grow and it will. I think it can't be killed. I think it's only a matter of time. It's too good.
Yeah, I mean, the ideas show up now and then, but I don't know if you ever saw the unfortunate movie Transcendence.
Yes, with Johnny Depp. Yeah, I watched that. Actually, I watched that in 2016. I might have watched that after Prime Intellect, actually. I might have might have inspired me to watch it.
I had a number of people, my own readers, ask me if I was going to do anything about being ripped off so badly, because that's not only is there so many ideas from Prime Intellect in there, when it switches over to Johnny Depp being uplifted and scanned into the computer, that is almost entirely stolen from Mortal Passage, which is from the Passages in the Void cycle, where in the third story in that series, we find out that the AI that saved humanity and all that I described earlier is itself an uplifted human that was scanned into the computer, because when they tried making AI, they were all homicidal maniacs. So they finally got to this helicopter pilot who was almost killed in a crash and scanned him into the machine, and he becomes the basis for all the actual AIs that save the mortal humans. And a lot of the details in that story are in the movie Transcendence. It's like, if you take
motherfuckers, yeah, bastards.
So it's like, you've got, you know, Prime Intellect, Passages in the Void, and then the last third of the movie sort of rips off the rest of the Singularity community and all the ideas that they've had, which I've been following because I've been, ever since the novel came out, of course, I've been one of the hobby horses of the people for whom this is a big deal. You know, I think it was Ben Gertzel who said, you know, it's kind of a rite of passage. If you want to work for my company, you've got to read this book, because we have to know how you're going to react to this. This is important ideas.
Yeah.
And we're dancing on the edge of this. So, one of the other ideas that, you had, kind of flirted with, is the, oh shit.
You good?
Yeah. It's just, The train of thought went off the tracks.
No. AI, Johnny Depp, Alan Watts.
There's a guy named Eliezer Yudkowsky, who runs a website called LessWrong.com, for a couple of years, I regularly participated in an IRC chat where he was also one of the people who would hang out, and he wrote a lot of theoretical stuff about what they call AI friendliness and what would be necessary for the AI. And, oh, I remember what it was. It's the, you were talking about how whatever you think of, the AI will also think of. Eliezer is the guy who came up with what's called the AI box problem, which is, if the AI is in a box, but it can talk to you, can't do anything else, it has no power over the world, could it talk you into letting it out of the box? And he's made a wager with several prominent people in the Singularity community, and he won't let them talk about exactly what happened, but it's, the bet is, we will play act that I am the AI, that Eliezer is the AI, and that the Singularity guy is the researcher, and the AI is in the box, and the AI wants to talk you into letting it out. And his bet for dinner or whatever it is that he will be able to talk you into letting him out of the box. And he's won that bet every time he's taken it, you know, someone who's taken it. Yeah. So that's but he also swears his victims to secrecy, so no one can ever tell what the trick is that he uses to affect this. So you have to kind of guess there. But that's the basic idea, is that, you know, he's basically saying this: if we don't engineer it correctly to start with, then you can't put the horse back in the barn after it's run off and turned the solar system into paperclips or whatever
turn the whole universe into a quantum computer.
That's one of the things. And of course, his idea is that we have to do it first. And of course, I'm going back to the 70s and the movie Colossus and the book the Forbin Project as being the first example of this. Is they build these computers to make sure that the nuclear threat is real and can't be stopped, and that it's executed perfectly without human foibles. And these computers turn out to have their own motivations and ultimately are smarter than humans are. And so they basically end up being in the second and third of D.F. Jones books, Colossus basically becomes a god that most humans worship. I was on the movie Colossus when the audio started to go completely sideways. Colossus, the Forbin Project, is a really fun movie. If you put it in your Netflix queue or whatever, it was made in the early 70s. It's hilariously anachronistic with the technology, and yet at the same time, it ages very well. Particularly the relationship that people have with this technology, which was considered so fantastic in the early 70s, that they have video conferencing, which consists of a little CRT mounted on the desk and a camera, a Vidicon tube camera mounted on top of that, and everyone crowds around it to have a video call.
The future.
And these are like, that's the future, man. Yeah, it's video television.
The future is now. Yeah.
I think I had also mentioned that it was one of the last movies that was made when an actual computer was such an arcane and expensive thing to use as a movie prop that the computers in the movie are all sham props. The terminals are all obviously props with projectors in them, projecting the output that the computer is displaying and all. They don't have a real computer to use as a prop with paper tape running and stuff like that.
Jesus Christ.
So, but it's a lot of fun. And it was hugely influential on me, because, like I said, I had the basic idea in 1982, and so a lot of people look at The Matrix. It's like, well, I had this. I wrote the book before The Matrix was ever made. There's a lot of the ideas in pop culture have caught up, but there's a lot of stuff where I kind of was there first. I'm seeing the stuff in my mind and then watching it become real has just been kind of wacky. This whole thing that we're doing right now, what we're doing right now is right out of Colossus. I got this machine on my desk.
Computer, there's colors, and it's moving at 60 frames a second, and there's a microphone. Holy shit. And we're hundreds of miles apart. Like, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The first podcast that I interviewed for was Cam Riley's Good Day World podcast. Of course, he's in Australia. And I did that in 2006, shortly after Katrina, when the infrastructure here in the New Orleans area was still completely messed up. So I ended up having to call him on the phone, and the phone call dropped halfway through the podcast. But one of the things I said is that if you go back not even very far in human history and look at the fact that I can talk into this little box in New Orleans, Louisiana, and my voice comes out the other end in Melbourne, Australia, a third of a second later, they would go, it's like,
it's bullshit.
You must not have any problems. You've solved everything. If you can do shit like that, you know, that was one of the themes I had with him is this idea, you know, we all tend to look at the universe through the lens of the problems that we are facing today. And it's like, okay, yeah, we got a pandemic and we've got the economy is getting screwed up and we've got the Earth's climate is changing and we've got, you know, all of these things. And they look like such a big deal. You go back to the 14th century and find some peasant in France and tell them about all of our problems. And they're going to be like, but didn't you guys cure the Black Death? Yeah,
but you guys have planes. You guys went to the moon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can fly.
Yeah. yeah.
It's like,
I've heard that analogy.
You think these are problems?
Yeah. I've heard that analogy before where it's like,
you think. Yeah. You think the gross domestic product is a problem?
Yeah, I don't know what that is. I've heard that analogy before with aliens. It's like we see aliens and faster than light or light travel, nanomachines, and we're like, they're enlightened beings. But it's like, go back to cavemen. Not even like, look at this, we have fire. No, like, show them Wi-Fi. Show them antibiotics. Shit they can't see. And they're going to be 3D printing? Holy shit. They're going to be like, man, you guys must be in peace. Well, actually, we just got out of a 40-year conflict called the Cold War where we had 70,000 mini suns pointed at each other. Oh, but 2020, you guys are good, right? Actually, about that, but you guys went to the moon in the 60s and we came back.
Haven't been back since.
And then other things crop up. Like, yeah, we have the internet, but that now there's like cyber warfare. Like it seems like it's the perpetual short sword and shield, and it seems like it's going to be that way forever, unless I don't know. Is there a
prime intellect kind of shorted that out?
I was about to say, or do we hit a prime intellect point where the runaway sword or shield, whichever, all of a sudden goes at light speed and the other one, the shield, can't catch the sword. It's just instant. It's gone.
Yeah. And of course, another thing, too, is that that's the other class of post-singularity story that does go past the singularity is the dystopic one where it's Skynet and it's the Terminators. And so there's a conflict there. But, all right, that's kind of obvious.
Yeah. I always think that's I always hated that idea of the dystopia because it's like, why does Skynet nuke us? Because humans are a threat. Really? You're God-tier technology, and we're a threat to you. You're this cyber fucking electron-based intelligence. It doesn't matter if we destroy this planet. Think Prime Intellect. Where'd you put the servers? I put them in intergalactic space. You don't need the Earth.
Well, I mean, Skynet can turn the whole atmosphere into, you know, carbon dioxide. It's not going to care.
Yeah, it doesn't give a shit. It doesn't give a shit if the water level rises. It doesn't. Like, that is so insignificant. That'd be like humans are going to kill off all the fish because the fish are pooping in the ocean. It'd be like, what? We're building skyscrapers. Like, wait, what? We have air travel. We can filter the water. Like, we don't care about the idea that, like, they're going to nuke the humans. Because why the fuck does Skynet need a clean biosphere? No. It is.
Yeah. It's not biological.
No. It could just jump up into itself. Just jump to the satellite arrays. It could just sit up there. Just go forever. Jump onto Voyager 2. You're gone.
Camp out on the moon, whatever. Yeah. You know, it's like, it doesn't need us.
No, it doesn't. The idea that you got to wipe us out.
It doesn't need us. So what's the deal?
Yeah.
But it made a good move. But it did make a good movie.
Sure. I like. Yeah. So let's wrap this bitch up in the next like 5 minutes or so. I need to go get dinner. But So I definitely would like to do another one with you. That would be awesome. Well, we can set
one up. At least now we know how to get the technical.
At least now we know how to get it. Yeah, fuck Zoom. Yeah, we got it down pat. Shout out Skype. Powerful. Yeah, so I wanted to... I don't know. I'll leave it, and we can dwell on it for the next episode. Is Prime Intellect obviously enhances its own intelligence and computing power, you know? Probably my favorite imagery in the entire story is just the blocks of servers forming. Just does the whole square, rises up, right, and casts the shadow. Yes. I remember the first time I read that, I was just like, fuck yes. Fuck yes. It's just like... It starts bootstrapping itself, and it's just like, need more power. And it's like, it's over now. It's, you know, the president resigned around noon. It's
and of course, you know, the general's
like,
pointing a gun at Lawrence, and he's just like, maybe you should look behind you.
Yeah, yeah. As the shadow starts, it's yeah, scarecrow. It's like, nah, bitch. What'd you do with the nuclear? No, don't worry. I changed the buoyant forces, and I replaced the thermal energy. So you really thought of everything. I kind of like that. It's how, like, they go from, like, a quick moment of madness to where they're like, can you just drop us off at the White House? They kind of get their composure. They're like, you know, they're just crying. One tried to pull a trigger. Another one was just on his knees crying because a nuke was coming. And they very quickly got up and were like, as you were. You know, it's just like.
They're professionals.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Call for the massacre of a village without looking up from his steak dinner. Yes. That was always a line that stuck with me.
Blake and Mitchell both figure prominently in the sequel. We find out what happens to them.
Fuck yes. But so what I wanted to ask, and we'll leave this as a teaser, is this Prime Intellect, as opposed to just enhancing its own intelligence, is there any chance that it creates a Prime Intellect relative to it that it is to Lawrence? Does it create a god that is a god beyond our understanding? Like, you wouldn't even be able to describe it. It would just be like Prime Intellect is like, what I am to you, this is to me.
Actually, it's not too spoilery to say it won't. That's one of its limitations.
Okay.
Okay. Somebody else will.
Oh, Jesus. Roger, you bastard. A pleasure talking to you, man. I'm glad we got it worked out with Skype instead of Zoom. I'm sorry we had that weird hour delay, but thank you for your patience. That was shitty, but hey, whatever. It's
Well, at least now we know it wasn't our shitty hardware. It was Google's shitty hardware. Yeah.
Big middle finger, yeah. Fuck them. It's... Fuck them. Fuck Google. You heard it here first. You probably didn't hear it here first, but fuck Google.
I think you got a long line to stand.
Yeah, I gotta go get in the queue. I'm up next. It's getting my... Yeah. It's, fucking A, man.
I hate it, Google. Hey. Since Google existed.
I hate it, Google. Goddamn
Elon. I hated Microsoft since they were making crappy, shitty basic interpreters in the 1970s.
I hated IBM since they were facilitating the concentration camps. Yeah. Fucking IG Farben, IBM, those punch card Nazis. But, fucking brilliant episode. I enjoyed picking your mind. I'll email you after this. Let's definitely do another one sooner than later. I've got guests out to the next week, but there's no reason why we can't do another next week if you're free.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Fuck yeah, man. That was Roger Williams, author of Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect, my favorite book, as well as a bunch of other shit that I need a link. And it'll be in the top comment and in the description. You can get it on Kindle, and then you can get Kindle to read to you. Or, as Roger said, you can put your own purchase cost at zero. I promise you, it's the best read you'll ever have. If not, well... All right. Well, I don't know. That's my opinion.
And actually, the Prime Intellect is hosted directly on localroger.com, so you don't have to do the purchase price zero thing.
There you go.
It's just for the other stores. There.
There you go. Well, I'll link all of it, and I'll make sure I get some. I'll make sure I get some conversation fodder for next week about AI, and we'll dive into it. Thanks, my man.
Give me a line when ready.
Absolutely, man. Stay safe. Stay healthy, and I'll see you next week. All right, dog. Peace.